much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves.
Make love in the hammock.
What?
Your friends, I like your friends. Now things have obviously changed for us.
I have to help Charles finish his movie.
Be good for you to spend some time with kids who don't run around with cameras and monster makeup.
Could you close your eyes, please?
Yeah.
And action!
Freighter derailed. What the cargo was on that freighter, we don't know.
We can't tell anyone.
I know.
I understand you have concerns about our cargo.
Colonel, there isn't anything else that I should know, is there?
I can assure you the answer is no.
We've gotten calls from people who found local dogs, but the calls coming in aren't local.
Lucy!
It's like they all just ran away.
I've got property damage. I've got theft. I've got 9 people missing now. There are things happening around here that I can't explain.
We have to find this thing.
I don't feel good about this.
Go!
I saw it. No one believes me.
I believe you.
What the hell?
Hey everybody, Dave McVeigh from Film Actually here. This is a special presentation of a roundtable discussion that we got to have with J.J. Abrams on Friday for the release of Super 8. The roundtable consisted of some of Australia's top bloggers, as Anthony pointed out. Anthony Britton was the moderator of the event. J.J. Abrams was terrific with his time, and we want to put a special thanks out to Anthony Britton at Way Too Blue and our friends at Paramount Pictures Australia for making this happen. Now, what you're about to hear is a 20-minute roundtable discussion. It consisted of myself, Josh Philpott, my co-host of Film Actually. He was there representing Cinefools.com, our very good friend Richard Gray from TheRealBits.com, our new friends David Longo from DamnGoodCup.com and Courtney Dawson from Lip Magazine. We all got to ask him a question or two, and his answers were just terrific. So sit back and enjoy the next 20 minutes of this. It was an event that I won't forget anytime soon. So here it is.
Great, guys. So we've got some of Australia's top bloggers here to talk to you. Which is very exciting. We're going to do one question each, because that's fair to start off with, and then after that open it out to everyone else.
Okay.
So whoever wants to go first?
We kind of have a group question just to start off with, which is basically, if this film is really, really successful, will this be the best birthday present for you ever? And happy birthday coming up.
just being finished with it is a happy birthday. I obviously hope people go, and I hope they enjoy themselves.
We did. So.
Yeah. Oh, right. Thank you very much. That's very sweet.
We did very much.
Thank you.
I've been kind of designated to start off, and I was just going to say that the film is an amazing homage to that period of time and the films of that period of time, which is really my period of films. So the question I had, though, was what did you feel that you really had to nail to sell that period of time, to really capture it?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for that. The first impulse for this thing was to revisit that period, to kind of go back to that time when my friends and I made these movies. And I called Steven, who I'd gotten to know over the years, immediately, and asked if he'd be interested in producing a movie with me called Super 8, about those kids at that time. And he said yes. This was before I knew what the story would be, what the, you know, that any genre would be, you know, what the genre would be. It was just a very preliminary notion. Working on the film itself, it was tricky because it's 79, and I didn't want it to be like a greatest hits of the 70s thing where there were like constant reminders that this was the 70s, and it was, you know, to me it was more Inside Out, the small details, not the big ones. Clearly some of the music, more in the first half of the film, was important to, you know, remind the audience. And yet, because the kids who came in to audition almost all had haircuts that were applicable in the 70s, because the cars of the 70s are kind of sought after, because some of the, you know, even the hair, the wardrobe, the, you know, reissues of certain T-shirts, and they're just, it wasn't like there was some massive period piece, although I have to say, the production designers and set dressers, you know, they did an amazing job by being invisible. They just made this thing feel real. I know I'm answering this question very with a lot of words, but the answer really is it had to, in order for this movie to work, especially because it was a look back, especially because the influences in that time for me were so powerful, and because it was a Spielberg-produced film, it had to be real from the inside out. It had to be real from a character point of view. That was more important to me than selling anything, selling the monster, selling the era. If you believed that these kids were real people, if you were interested in their relationships, if you were amused by them, if you cared for them, then everything else would work out.
Yeah.
You know, that was the only thing that I really was desperate to focus on, and of course always looking out to make sure that that felt legitimate for the era. And even in the last week of post, someone saw there was a satellite dish and a shot, and we had to paint it up. You know, we were always looking, you know, we were constantly catching things that were, you know, these sort of, whether we were on the set or not, that these sort of, you know, things that we were giveaways, that we weren't actually there. We had to get rid of all those, you know, anachronisms.
That's fantastic.
I guess my question leads on from that, which was to do with the period setting. It sort of struck me that while I was watching, you couldn't set the movie in 2011 because, you know, instantly someone would have tweeted that immediately, or the media would be alerted. For you as a storyteller, was that challenging or quite liberating to not have to deal with all that kind of ubiquitous media?
It was the greatest thing in the world. I mean, seriously, as I, you know, everyone can imagine, you know, the cell phone is sort of the death of drama. Like, you know, the instant information, the lack of secrets, the ability to sort of know whatever you want to know, whenever you want to know. You know, it's just the process has gone away. So, you know, the great thing about this is if these kids wanted to communicate, they'd have to get on their bikes, they'd have to, like, use the walkie-talkies for as much as they could, and even that was was sort of more fun and silly than it was practical. The idea of, you know, making movies at all. I mean, obviously, we could all, with all of us right now, make a movie that would look infinitely better than anything that we could have ever done Super 8 instantly. And if we didn't like it, re-record over that. We don't have to think about how much film we have, how much it costs, how long it takes to get it developed. When you're editing it, you know, the undo button didn't exist. If you made a cut, you didn't like it. It was like that was it. You know, so there was a sort of process that, you know, Steven and I have talked about this because he much prefers cutting on film than digital, and will be, you know, has done both, and will be going back to film again, editing film for Lincoln, and it's something that for him, I know, he likes the time it takes to consider that cut, and he likes the you know, while the cut is being made, to consider the other cuts that are coming. It just, there's a kind of frivolousness to the choices that we make, because you always know you can just hit undo, and that never existed then, and the amount of time it took when you got the film back, allowed you to sort of consider what your intention was and what you were trying to do. I'm not saying I'm this Luddite that wants to embrace, you know, only the most primitive of filmmaking techniques. However, you know, we couldn't have done much of what we did in this film without the use of digital technology. But I did really enjoy that kind of approach. I've totally forgotten your question.
Spielberg once said him and Michael Kahn also like the aesthetic of film. They like the whole viola and stuff like that.
100%. I mean, and it really is something that I do miss. And working on this movie, the sense memory flashback of being in the rooms and seeing film strips and the splicers and the viewers. And I mean, it's a kind of, you know, I guess anything that if you look back fondly on something and you get to experience it again in any form, there's a kind of, you know, reverence that you hold for those things. But there really was something about, as shitty as the film, you know, look ultimately was, and by the way, Superman actually looks better than you think it does, when I was surprised, but, you know, you were so limited in so many ways, and yet it was kind of something about the aesthetic and the tactile nature of it all, which, by the way, is obviously true in life in general. I mean, now when you want a song, you know, you click a button that's not even really a button. You're giving money that you're not actually even holding. You get the song that you don't actually get to hold in your hand. I mean, it's not. There's so little tactile now that there's something about film that you could not help but, you know, live with that, you know, that sense of process. So that there was, you know, even when a cut didn't work, it was like it wasn't without the intention and the consideration and the thought of it. There was very little arbitrary, you know, choices there. Anyway,
yep. I really liked the performances of the children in the movie. And I just wanted to know what the differences between directing kids and directing adults are, and if Spielberg gave you any advice on...
He did. He actually gave some great advice. I'm glad you liked the kids in the movie.
I liked all the performances. But
oh, great. I appreciate it. The thing he said was that with kids, you can give them line readings, which I never would have considered doing. I never would...
Because you're never supposed to, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to say that, you know... You know, you don't say Tom Cruise, don't listen. Say it like this. It's not a good idea. But what you do want to do, you know, with kids is as best you can convey what's going on. Now, certain actors, like Elle Fanning, it was insane. I mean, she has a level of kind of sophistication and understanding of not only what the intention is or what needs to happen in a scene, but how to do it and how to make it seem... She is a star on a, you know, order of magnitude I haven't seen in a long time. The other kids who had never been on the set before of anything, you know, needed a little bit more hand-holding. And one of the things about the line-reading thing was it just cut through crap. It, like, let me... Because I'd be sitting trying to explain something, and I was like, that's not cool. You know, we do another take. It wasn't quite... And finally, I could just say, look, just do it like this. And I could just say the line, and they'd be like, oh. And then they would do it like that. They were never offended. It saved hours. And a lot of times... While we were shooting, you know, I would just keep rolling and just go again and sort of off camera, just sort of do that a little bit here and there. But the truth is, they were just terrific from the beginning. And the difference really between dealing with the kids and dealing with adults is marginal. Maybe the biggest thing is that you don't usually have to wrangle a bunch of actors. I mean, like, I remember, you know, we did a lot of scenes in Star Trek where there were a lot of, you know, there were six people in one scene, seven people. And it was, you know, when you have people together, it becomes, even though it's work, it's somewhat of a social environment, and people can get distracted, unfocused. It takes a little... I mean, I remember this was one time on Trek where I had to, like, you know, treat the cast like I was, like, you know, they were my kids. and sort of, you know, basically, like, walk off the set until they were ready to actually work, kind of thing. But, like, once, and you couldn't help it. You had, you know, Carl Urban, who's ridiculously funny, and, you know, you've got Simon Pegg, who's, you know, the greatest. You've got Chris Pine being an exact... I mean, they're all just like, you know, John Cho. It was like, you cannot ask them to always be serious. There's no way you want to. But with these kids, there were times when they just, like, you know... You could not get one kid to focus, and it was just, you know, finally you would, and then the other kid would go off, and you'd be like, unbelievable, like just, you know, and it was just sort of like spinning plates sometimes. But the fact is, they were really hardworking, sweet kids, dedicated to doing a good job, and so for the most part, it was really just about letting that dynamic exist in the movie and not try and undo that. I mean, I didn't want to become any kind of iron-fisted director, because I wanted that dynamic. The question was, you know, we only had so many hours with them a day. We had to really get those lines on camera and do the most we could do, you know, every day of the shoot. So sometimes it just was a little bit more, you know, having to wrangle the kids than you normally would with actors.
What about with the special effects? I can't say because of...
Ask your question.
With the creature, with the kids interacting with the creature, like, how do you go about? Yeah,
you know, I got to tell you, they were amazing doing that, because obviously we did a lot of that was all in post, and they just had to trust that there was going to be something there to interact with. And you know, especially Joel Courtney, who, like, he had to go and confront this you know, this thing in a way, in this one particular scene that was literally one of those scenes that, like, it's either going to work or it's not. And I always wanted to try to do it, because the truth is, in that scene where he's finally confronting this thing, and this thing is sort of, just for me, served as a metaphor for the pain he's suffering, mm-hmm. having lost his mother, yeah. that literally the final confrontation, this moment, the words that he speaks, he's just talking to himself, and everything he says is just what he needs to hear. And it's all about that moment of surviving by actually looking at the thing that is the most scary to you. And that's a tall order for a kid who's, you know, never been on the set of a movie and suddenly mm-hmm. starring in one. And he just killed it. And I just thought it was, you know, one of those things that we actually had one less day to shoot the entire sequence, tunnel sequence, than we were scheduled for, just because we'd gone over earlier. And it was like, oh my God, you know, you really want to take a day out of the schedule in the climax of the film. But ultimately, we had no choice. We just did it. And in a very compressed amount of time, and then, you know, in a very long day, ultimately, he just kicked butt and did a great job. So I was really proud of him.
Awesome. Yeah, it worked out really well.
Yeah, he's an amazing actor.
He did a great job.
One of
really
my favorite
good.
Scenes in the movie, that, actually.
Oh, right on. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's fantastic.
And his relationship with Ellie is just remarkable.
I just, I got to tell you, that was funny, the one more quick thing, which is there's a scene where she's, you know, the one where she asks how to be a zombie, and he tells her, and she tries it out, and, you know, and it's just, what was so great about doing that scene is that it was her being eerily good, and him just being way, you know, over his head, like, you know, over his head, like, it was just what it was. I mean, it was acting too, and sure, they were doing the lines, but there was something about the absolute chemical truth of this boy looking at this girl who's, like, coming and getting closer and closer and closer and closer and just not knowing what to do and being paralyzed. It was so funny and wonderful to see, because it was just real. And that was kind of an amazing thing, to sort of catch them both in a moment where all that stuff was, you know, literally true for them as much as it was right for the script. So that was really cool.
Well, on the subject of heart, a lot of the sort of modern blockbusters have a huge thing about sort of effects and stuff like this. This has so much heart in it. It's really kind of like biggest thing about the film. Is it difficult to sell a whole lot of character building in a film to, like, producers?
Is it, like, you mean to the studio?
Yeah.
I gotta say, you know, and part of it, I'm sure, was just the studio knowing it was an Amblin film that Steven was producing, that they, you know, Paramount and Bad Robot have been lucky to, with Star Trek and Mission and Cloverfield, to do all right together. So I think that plus the Steven Amblin, you know, connection, I think gave them confidence in a movie that I think fits into as a sort of sister film to more classic, you know, known Amblin movies, that they felt like this was, you know, a gamble worth taking. Of course, what you're saying, though, despite what any studio thinks, the truth is, it's really going to be up to the audience. You know, will they go? Do they want to see something that isn't simply, you know, pyrotechnics? And I know that one of the issues in selling the movie is a lot of commercials have sort of been more horror movie, you know, focused than sort of character and emotionally leaning. And that's actually changing a little bit in the final days, where the commercials are going to be as much about the, you know, whether it's a combination of, you know, images and music, and sort of widening the and broadening the, honestly, the truth of what the movie is. Because I think that, you know, it's not just a scary movie. There are scary moments in it, but it's hardly a horror movie. And I feel like, you know, my favorite thing about Amblin movies was it combined all these elements that I loved. You know, they were often kids, and there was a sort of sense of empowerment in the kids. But they were dealing with family issues. There were issues of love and friendship, and typically there was some kind of adventure that, while it may be scary at times, you never felt like those movies were being done in a kind of, you know, sadistic way. There's always a big heart to those movies, and that was really important to me.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because in the initial trailers, I got a very different feeling when I actually sat down in the movie, and I don't know whether it's just because we are all big film heads, but you could instantly tell it was from that era, and that it felt like that kind of a movie. So it is a different experience to the first trailers, and I felt that really worked.
Yeah, oh good. Well, it's ultimately going to be one of those things that I do feel like, because it's a combination of so many genres in a way, that the challenge of sort of nailing that in a 30-second commercial or 15-second commercial is very tricky. Yeah. And it's a combination, I think, of just the music and the imagery. But what I'm hoping to not, you know, do is spoil the whole story for people, so that when they go and they see it, there's a surprise of what they get. And, you know, look, we're up against huge, massive, you know, franchises and pre-existing characters and all that stuff. So, you know, and I'm, by the way, a fan of a lot of them, and I'm responsible for sequels as well, and I'm not deriding them, but I do feel like the idea of this movie, it's exciting to me. You know, I'm proud of it for a lot of reasons, notably the work of the actors and the crew. But I feel like, you know, I hope there's room for a movie like this, that there's room for a film that's not based on
something like that.
One last question, guys, which falls to me.
I was just going to ask, do you prefer to produce or write and direct? Like, do you have a preference? And could you relate to Charles's character at all? Were you sort of an aspiring filmmaker when you were young as well?
Yeah, I mean, that was a lot of what I didn't have the confidence that he has. Yeah. You know, he's bossy and sort of, maybe I was, I don't know. But I don't think that I was quite as bullish as he is. But I was making movies, and I had those magazines. I mean, that he's got this magazine, Super 8 Filmmaker magazine, that was a real magazine that I was obsessed with when I was a kid. And, you know, again, I hadn't seen them in a long time, but you know, it was fun to have those kind of things around on the set. But I love that stuff. And what was the first question?
Oh, just if you prefer to produce.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. They're different. They're very different jobs. The great thing about directing is that it means that the writing, you know, has gotten you there. So you're kind of over the hardest part of the writing, and it means that the producing, much of the heavy lifting has been done, because you're actually on the set directing something. So directing kind of implies that the other jobs have at least thus far successfully gotten you to this place, which is, I love it. And also, you know, directing is awesome, because you, when you go in to start working, you know what your day's work is, you know what the scenes are going to be, but you just don't know what you're going to get. You don't know exactly what the light is going to be. You don't know what the characters, you know, the actors are going to bring to the characters. You don't know, you know, when you get there and you're actually standing on, as much as you may storyboard something or previs or think of it in your head, when you're actually there in a room with people, you can just, you just have to look at that and go, okay, what should I do? You know, I've thrown away ideas completely and started over. I've tried to force the thing I wanted to do into a moment until I finally realized, like, it's just not going to work. You know, so it's always a different thing, and it's a social situation. It's far less lonely than, you know, sitting alone and working on a script. It's fun because you have the pressure of you only got so much time to get that thing, and you know, it's just a little bit of a kind of gambling situation where you're like, okay, if I spend two more hours in this scene, can I get that those next two scenes in 2 hours left? You know, and like you try to like figure out what battles you're gonna pick, and so there's a sort of combination of elements that make directing, you know, sort of a more social and kind of fun situation. But of course, the great thing is you get to set the shots and you get to set the tone of the scenes and work with the actors to sort of hopefully bring out the best and the things you'd never expected. And suddenly someone's doing a reading of a line, you thought, oh my God, that line is much more important than I thought it was. And you never thought of it that way because you never heard of it in that way in that room, despite the read-throughs or whatever. So that to me is the most fun part of the process.
Great, guys. That's it, I'm afraid.
Thank you very much. Really quick, just really quick.
Very quick.
Yes or no question. We're just something that follows on with that one. Did you direct the Super 8 film at the end?
Or was yes, I did.
Yeah, you did.
I
did. Good question.
And I was operating the camera, and it was literally like the most you know, natural, easy, like fun part of every day.
It was genius.
It was so much fun to get. Oh. Especially when, I mean, and they're all fun scenes, but when Riley was like the doctor, you know, it was just...
I like the president myself.
Oh my God, that was
I
so...
I liked the Hitchcock thing.
I just love
that one little eye look Bruce like this.
Yeah, okay, I've been caught. And by the way, like, the story makes no sense. You know, he knows. What the hell he's talking about?
Thanks so much. Thanks, it's a pleasure.
Thanks
a lot. Absolute
pleasure meeting you. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as we did, because it was terrific fun. And go see the film. It is a terrific film. We'll be reviewing it in full on next week's Film Actually show, and our written review will be up on the site, geekactually.com, in the next day or so. So that's it. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week on Film Actually. You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.